Welcome, everyone, to the Instructional Leadership Show. This is episode 47, Changing Teacher Practice Through Conversation. Welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for tuning in and catching this episode of the Instructional Leadership Show. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and today we are here to talk about changing teacher practice through conversation. I believe that practice changes primarily through conversation, not through the written feedback, not through the formal evaluation, but really through that interpersonal conversation that we have with the individual teacher. So whether you are an instructional coach, an administrator, a central office administrator who supervises principals or instructional coaches, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. And I'm excited to talk about this topic because I think it's right at the heart of our work at the Principal Center and on the show here. Every week in every episode of the Instructional Leadership Show, it's our mission to help you confidently get into classrooms every day, have feedback conversations that change teacher practice. So right there, baked into the mission of our show and of the Principal Center is this idea that it's conversations, feedback conversations that change teacher practice. And then third, ultimately those lead to discovering our best opportunities for school improvement. So our essential question for today, and we'll be revisiting this question throughout the month of March, is how can we change teacher practice through evidence-based feedback conversations using a shared instructional framework? So we'll dive into the evidence-based based piece in another episode, and we'll talk more about instructional frameworks elsewhere. But today, we're talking about the central format, that format of a feedback conversation. I think when we consider the big decisions that we make as human beings, the big decisions we make about our lives, overwhelmingly, we're making those decisions in conversation with people that we care about, with people who are close to us, with people who are influential, with people who are knowledgeable. Decisions like, where should I go to college? You know, you can probably recall conversations maybe with your parents, with a guidance counselor, with older siblings, or with acquaintances who had gone off to college or had experience at different universities. It's conversation that clues you in and helps you make a decision about something that is kind of big picture, kind of nebulous. There are a lot of unknowns. You're not even sure what questions really to ask. And the outcome of that hopefully is a decision that you're happy with, but you had information available to you in other formats, probably in writing. You can look things up I don't know if you could look things up online when you decided where to go to college, depending on your age, but you had brochures and catalogs and things like that informed that decision. But ultimately it came down to conversations with key people. If you think about the decision you made about where to work, where to apply for jobs, what kind of schools you wanted to work in, who to marry, what kind of person you were looking for, and whether the person that you were thinking about at the moment had the set of stuff that you were looking for in terms of qualities, the kind of personality, there are a lot of conversations that clue you in to what kind of person someone else is. What kind of house should we buy? I'm thinking about the decision we made close to a decade ago now to move back to my wife's hometown and move into a historic house that, was a big decision, needed some work. And, there were a lot of conversations that went into that. We make big decisions about families, about kids and whether to have them and how to raise them and, all the different decisions that go into being a parent. We make those decisions in conversation with our partner, and we make decisions about how to deal with aging parents, deal with their medical issues, and all the different things that may be going on with parents, in conversation with your siblings, with your immediate family. So all of the big decisions that we make in life, we make through conversation with other human beings. And while there are always documents to look at, and sometimes there are forms to fill out after we make the decision, the big important part happens in conversation. And when it comes to changing teacher practice, when it comes to giving feedback to teachers about their strengths and weaknesses and how things are going and what they might want to do differently, we have got to recognize that fundamentally, these are conversations. But I'm calling this out, I'm naming this, I'm emphasizing this, I'm dwelling on this, because I think that far too often, we don't see feedback as a conversation in our profession. We see feedback as more of a drive-by or more of a delivery. I don't know if you had a paper route when you were a kid. I had a paper route for a while. And of course, in a paper route, you don't go talk to your customers who receive the paper. You just kind of chuck it at them. You know, you drive by on your ride by on your bike and, you know, pull a paper out. Or if you're driving in a car, we had to drive for this paper out because it was in a kind of a rural area. And you chuck that paper out the window and it lands in the driveway. And I think that's a much more fitting metaphor for a lot of the feedback that teachers receive from instructional leaders who don't see the importance of having a conversation, who see their role as leaders as simply one of making a decision, collecting information, filling out a form, and then chucking it at the teacher, right? Passing it on to the teacher. But just like that newspaper that sits in the driveway, we don't really know what's going to happen with that quote-unquote feedback if all we do is throw it in the teacher's general direction. Sometimes we would come back, I would come back on the next day for my paper out, and I'd see yesterday's paper still lying there in the driveway, maybe soaking wet from the dew overnight, or maybe it rained, and I didn't really care because it was just a paper route. But if we're putting a lot of work, if we're putting a lot of time, if we're putting heart and soul into that feedback, it's pretty disheartening to think that it could basically just be sitting there in the driveway and not really changing the teacher's practice. So if we want our feedback to make a difference, I believe we've got to do better than simply chuck it in the teacher's general direction like a kid on a paper route. And the way we do that, the way we ensure that our feedback is more impactful, that it lands in the way that it needs to, and that it's on target in the first place, is by making it not a delivery, not a drive-by, not something we throw at the teacher, but a conversation. So this month, our theme in the Instructional Leadership Association and here on the Instructional Leadership Show is conversations. Get into feedback conversations. Every month we have a theme and we organize those themes with a rubric that we call the roadmap. You can take a quick self-assessment, figure out where the best place for you to focus is at principalcenter.com/ILSA, that's principalcenter.com/ILSA. And based on your answers, based on the opportunities in front of you and how you respond to the questions on that short quiz, it will give you a recommendation about where to focus. So if you're a member of the Instructional Leadership Association and the quiz tells you you should focus on stage five, well, we can point you to resources for stage five. If it tells you to start at the beginning, at the productivity phase, then you can start there. And we've got plenty of resources for you. But every month we have new resources in one particular column of this roadmap. And for the month of March, we are focusing on feedback conversations. So here's what the rubric says. I know this is small on your screen. Level one is basically giving teachers feedback only in the annual evaluation process or if there's something very unusual that happens. You know, if you walk in and something's terrible, you might give corrective feedback. But at that level, basically, teachers are hardly ever receiving feedback, just pretty much once a year. At level two in our rubric, and again, you can take the quiz at principalcenter.com/ILSA for Instructional Leadership Self-Assessment. At level two, it says, I give teachers written feedback from my informal visits without having a conversation. Now, if you are giving feedback on any kind of consistent basis using a form, maybe you have a little note that you leave or you write a little card or send an email or something, then I want to acknowledge that simply doing that on a regular basis is extraordinary. So kudos, my hat goes off to you, congratulations if you are doing that, because honestly, most administrators are not. Most administrators are at a level one. I would say probably 90% are at that level one, where basically the only feedback teachers receive on any kind of consistent basis is the annual feedback that they get through the observation and evaluation process. And of course, if we want to change teacher practice, if we want to improve teacher practice to a level that we are thrilled about, we know that is not going to be enough. So level two, there is some feedback, but you know, there's not really a conversation. Level three is where I think we need to be. It's not maybe the ultimate to strive for, but this is where I would like to see every principal's performance. I share my written evidence with the teacher immediately, and I have an evidence-based feedback conversation on the spot or soon after my visit. This, to me, is the sweet spot. This is where we're really having an impact. We're getting into classrooms consistently, you know, every day, visit three classrooms. Every 2 weeks, get around to every single teacher. And, you know, if you stick to that schedule, as I talk about in my book, Now We're Talking, 21 Days to High Performance Instructional Leadership, you will be on track to visit classrooms a good 500 times a year. And each individual teacher, you know, 10, 15, 20 times, depending on how many teachers you personally supervise. Those evidence-based feedback conversations can be the opportunity that you've been waiting for to have an influence on teacher practice. So if the throwing the newspaper in the driveway is not getting the job done, feedback conversations face-to-face, even if they're very, very brief conversations, are the vehicle you have been looking for. Now, our rubric also goes up to level 4, so a step above that proficient level is a differentiated feedback conversation with every teacher. And we'll talk about this in another episode sometime, but there are different roles that we can play based on what happens in the conversation. And one of the really nice things about making it a conversation and not just a form that we fill out is we can figure it out as we go. Sometimes teachers need us to play the boss and just tell them what to do. You know, I had a teacher once who was not planning math lessons in advance. I had to tell him, look, you are winging it every day, and I know you think you're doing fine, but you're not. So let me tell you, let me just lay it out here for you. This is not optional. You have to plan ahead of time. You cannot wing it. You cannot read out of the teacher's guide. And he had been convincing himself that he could get away with that. And I just had to tell him, look, I know you're an experienced and talented teacher, but you got to prepare. Sometimes teachers need us to wear that boss hat and just lay down the law and say, this is what has to happen, and give a directive. Sometimes people need a coach. They need a thinking partner. They need someone that they can reflect with. And probably 80 or 90% of the time, this is the role we want to play, right? When things are going fine, when the teacher is being reflective, they're listening to the evidence that we're gathering, they're listening to our comments, and they are taking them seriously so that they can decide what to change. Often that is the role that we want to play. But then sometimes we also might need to play more of a leader role, put on that reflexive listener hat and not just give feedback, but also receive feedback about how we can create conditions more conducive to learning as the people who are responsible for the school overall. So that is our rubric for the month. And if you are familiar with the book that I held up just a moment ago, especially the model in chapter 2 of the book, you'll know that our classroom walkthrough model is centered around making 500 classroom visits a year, visits that are frequent, brief, substantive, open-ended, evidence-based, criterion-referenced, and conversation-oriented. And I highlight those 7 elements, and I've bolded 5 of them here because they stand in direct contrast to what most people do in classroom walkthroughs. Most people in classroom walkthroughs just either pop in and don't do anything, or they try to fill out a form and provide that form to the teacher, or write some sort of note to the teacher with maybe a positive comment and a negative comment, or a positive comment and a question, some sort of constructive criticism along with a compliment. And I have intentionally left that out of this model because I think you will be more successful and you will have a lot more fun with this and you'll have a much greater impact on teacher practice if instead of filling out a form, instead of leaving a note, you make your visits conversation oriented. If you are a member of the Instructional Leadership Association, we have the audiobook for you at dashboard.principalcenter.com. You can click on the Now We're Talking audiobook, and we also send you a copy in the mail if you are a member. So if you're not a member, you should really be a member. It's a great thing to be a member of the Instructional Leadership Association because every week you get my latest and greatest thinking on instructional leadership. And today I have a very simple recommendation for you. If I could recommend one thing above everything else, it would be this: stop using forms for feedback. Now, I know you have to use forms to document your formal observations. I think that's probably why we call them forms, and it's why we call them formal observations, because there's a level of formality to it. They are a formality. It's a formal thing that we do. But most of the time, all of that stuff is not for the teacher. If we want to help teachers improve, if we want to change teacher practice, we will do better if we stop using forms. That is my flag that I'm planting on top of this hill today. So I want to give you a couple of reasons why I believe that is the case. I think I've got five here. Number one, why do feedback forms inhibit teacher growth? Number one, I think the fundamental problem with feedback forms, when you're doing a classroom walkthrough, you want to give some feedback to the teacher on what you saw and what you thought about it. It's a fundamentally weird thing to do. There is no space in human existence where people who are getting along with one another and nothing is seriously wrong fill out forms about each other, right? Like, I promise you do not do this at home, right? Where you fill out an evaluation form about your spouse and hand it to them and say, hey, really good job cleaning up after dinner last night. Just really appreciated the way you loaded the dishwasher. If you filled out a form, like, you would be asked to have your head checked if you did that at home, right? If you filled out a form about your significant other. And we don't do that with our kids. Like, sometimes we do things like chore charts, but those are more about like organization. We don't fill out feedback forms about other human beings. It's just weird. And I think we have to be careful about introducing such a weird structure into our conversations with teachers just because we can, right? Like, nobody's saying you can't do this, but I am saying it's weird. So maybe we should not use feedback forms. Number two, there's a built-in implication that if we're using a form, then something negative has happened that needs to be documented, right? If somebody fills out a form about you, it's an incident report, it's an accident report, it's a speeding ticket, it's a moving violation. You know, it's always something bad when someone fills out a form about you, right? And if we want teachers to enjoy these feedback conversations and take them seriously and take the feedback to heart, I think we'll do better without that negative implication. Number three, this implication might not always be as negative, but it really pulls the ownership back to us and away from the teacher. Number three, forms imply that the real decision has already been made, that the important part was the judgment that we exercised as observers, and teachers just need to obey and accept that judgment. When I think for teachers to really grow and really benefit from feedback conversations and improve their practice as a result of those conversations, it's wrong to say that the important decisions have already been made when the form is filled out and, you know, it just gets handed over to the teacher. I think the really important decisions are the decisions the teacher makes about their own practice moving forward, and forms get in the way of that. On the same note, number four, forms treat the observer as the only person whose opinion counts. If our goal is drive-by Paperboy feedback, that was a video game when I was a kid. Paperboy, you got to ride a bicycle. It was like 8-bit, you know, original Nintendo video game. You got to ride a bike by people's houses and fling a newspaper at them. You don't talk to the people. Sometimes dogs chase you. It's not a lot of fun. It's not a very good video game, frankly. It wasn't very fun. And I think it's not very fun as an instructional leadership practice, because really the fun is in talking about practice. The other person's opinion counts. So we have to actually listen to that opinion. Number five, why forms inhibit growth? Number five, because they don't leave room for higher order thinking. Now, we've got to be really honest with ourselves about what that higher order thinking entails, what level of, say, Bloom's taxonomy we are operating at. Evaluation, doing any kind of evaluative observation of a teacher, really is at the top of the pyramid. And all of the cognitive tasks that we're doing when we're observing teaching and kind of taking it in and making sense of it and making decisions about how to respond to it, ultimately, you know, we're getting to some higher order decisions that are based on that firsthand observation. So down at the bottom of the pyramid, the base of the pyramid in green there on this particular diagram is knowledge. You know, we have to get into classrooms to know what's going on. But we can't skip straight from knowledge, straight from direct observation, all the way up to evaluation, right? This is a taxonomy, not because knowledge is necessary, so it's a foundation, and evaluation is the best, so let's jump straight to it. It's built as a pyramid on purpose. It's depicted, Bloom's taxonomy is depicted as a pyramid for very good reasons. If we are going to use knowledge in higher order cognitive operations like feedback, you know, giving teachers feedback on their thinking and evaluating their performance, then the next step is not to jump straight to evaluation. The next step, once we have gathered that knowledge, gathered that evidence of practice, is to make sure that we comprehend it and to make sure that we're applying it and analyzing it correctly and synthesizing it with the other evidence that we have. Only when we have gone through all of those cognitive steps, you know, they kind of mix together in a conversation and they can happen very efficiently in a conversation, but we can't skip the conversation and still make the right decision. And I think so many districts get themselves bent out of shape around calibration, right? We want to be able to gather knowledge and then make a correct evaluation. We want to be able to observe a clip of teaching and have all of our administrators district-wide give that teacher the same rating. And if we look at Bloom's taxonomy for a moment, we can see why that's kind of a ridiculous goal. Why skipping those middle layers of the pyramid really set this whole process up for failure. If we are willing to include and acknowledge the importance of those central layers of Bloom's taxonomy, we can understand how teacher practice actually changes through conversation. So we've got to discuss the evidence. And as we said with major life decisions, people base their big decisions on conversation, right? We develop our understanding, we change our mind, we change our opinion, we form opinions in the first place, we perhaps express out loud to other people for the first time things that we haven't really even been able to express for ourselves. So I want to leave you with that big takeaway today, that practice changes through conversation. If you want to change teacher practice more, you've got to have more feedback conversations with teachers. They can't be the drive-by newspaper delivery feedback where you just chuck something, you know, fill out a form and chuck it at the teacher. That's not going to get us there. Now, what you can do to make sure that these are evidence-based feedback conversations is you can share your notes with the teacher and say, hey, I'm going to come in and write down as much of what I see in here as possible. I'm going to give you those notes. And then we can have a conversation about what I saw. We can compare what I saw and wrote down to what you perceived was going on during the lesson. That's often very illuminating to have that comparison conversation, because from the front of the room or wherever the teacher is, they're noticing very different things than you are as an observer. And, you know, if you're free to kind of step back and listen to students and not really have to manage things the way the teacher does, you can certainly gather richer information. That's a great discussion, you know, to have that comparison. But you don't need a form to do that. Now, you may have to fill out a form to document that all of this took place. If your district requires that, okay. If you are a superintendent or a director, I want to encourage you to minimize the use of forms and really strive to frame this for people as a conversational practice. Because if we're going to change teacher practice, it's going to be through conversation. Now, there is much more than we are going to tackle today. We're going to wrap it up here. But I want to let you know about a project that we have going on for the coming year. So through the 2021 school year, I'm doing something called the Instructional Vision Project, where I'm working with a select group of schools to articulate a vision and take a hard look at where things are currently. So we're looking at the current reality, and we're articulating a vision for instructional change, and then closing that gap through what I call the evidence-driven leadership system. And a big part of that, I'm going to give you a big spoiler here, a big part of that evidence-driven leadership system is getting into classrooms and having feedback conversations with teachers. Because we can all imagine how it would really not work for someone to just, you know, make a vision from afar, right? Like, there's a reason you don't get your school vision on Amazon, right? It has to be, you know, custom to your organization and fit your unique goals and the needs of your students and the passion and talents of your staff. You know, the vision has to be owned, right? So articulating that vision is a big part of what we'll be doing in the Instructional Vision Project, and articulating it in the form of rubrics that can then serve as the common vocabulary and the shared expectations for practice, so that when you sit down to have that feedback conversation, you're discussing the evidence in relation to those shared expectations, and the rubric itself creates the vision, the roadmap that you are moving toward. So if you're interested in working with me in the Instructional Vision Project, I'm going to be putting together a book proposal pretty soon on that, doing some case studies of schools that are articulating and moving toward their vision. So you can learn more at principalcenter.com/vision. Our navigator schools are the ones that I will be drawing my sample from, my case studies from. And if you're interested in becoming a navigator school, we can get you a quote. We can share everything that's included with our navigator membership. You can find that at principalcenter.com/navigator. Download a brochure, reach out if you'd like to get a quote. And we also have membership at the district level. So if you are a central office administrator, a superintendent, an area director, a regional service center, a professional development provider, I've had some great conversations with people in that role lately. We have a senior leadership program called the Instructional Leadership Directors Roundtable, where in addition to the professional development for school-based leaders, we have something special for central office leaders, for those kind of executive thought leaders who are making those decisions system-wide. So I'd be happy to have a conversation with you about that if you think that might be a good fit, and you can find more at principalcenter.com/roundtable. So that is it for today. Get out there, get into classrooms, and get into those feedback conversations with teachers. That is it for today. This has been episode 47 of the Instructional Leadership Show, Changing Teacher Practice Through Conversation. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and I will see you next time. Take care.